The Windy City, The Second City, Chi Town, Chicagoland. It's got many names and many, many wonderful people and many, many wonderful places to eat. It's got many legends, many stories of ghosts and strange lore. But since the middle of last year, people have been alleging it's got a new resident, a winged humanoid quite similar in description to the Mothman of Point Pleasant, West Virginia. Is the great city of Chicago being invaded by a mysterious flying creature that defies science and logic? Stay tuned.
It's actually quite unlike anything we've ever seen before.
A giant, hairy creature, part ape, part man.
In Loch Ness, a 24-mile-long bottomless lake in the highlands of Scotland, it's a creature known as the Loch Ness Monster.
Monster Talk.
Welcome to Monster Talk, the science show about monsters. I'm Blake Smith.
And I'm Karen Stolzner.
I never feel like I have to apologize for being skeptical. For me, true skepticism is about looking for evidence and testable explanations and trying to use critical thinking when examining issues. This is certainly not limited to the paranormal, but I hope it's clear by now that Karen and I, and many of you awesome Monster Talk listeners, are able to simultaneously enjoy these kind of stories and also to think critically about whether or not they're true. Often, it's impossible to find out if something really happened, but you can check out stories to see if there's any obvious discrepancies between what was reported and what really happened. Skeptical paranormal investigations are a lot like detective work. Did the witnesses report a bright full moon, but according to the calendar, it was really rainy with a new moon? Did the story involve a quiet, eerie walk down a lonely street? Only at the time, there was a huge concert and the sidewalks would have been filled with potential witnesses. These don't always disprove strange stories, but checking out the real landscape and circumstances around a story can often reveal details which hint at embellishment, mistaken identification, or even outright hoaxes. There are plenty of reasons to be highly skeptical of the idea of a man-sized winged humanoid flying around Chicago. For accounts of these creatures that describe a winged humanoid, we have the problem that from a scientific perspective, biology on Earth doesn't support any evolutionary basis for a six-limbed humanoid capable of flight. Birds of this size wouldn't have six limbs. We've talked about the four-limb biological model before. These are called tetrapods. I recommend you check out Tetrapod Zoology Podcast by Darren Naish at tetzoo.com. Earth is also home to flying six-limbed creatures, but we call them insects, and they're not the size of humans. But just because something doesn't fit within the known patterns of biology doesn't mean it shouldn't be researched. It just suggests there might be other factors at play, such as misidentification or, sadly, hoaxing. And even though the very least likely explanation is that an unknown human-sized animal is out there, flying around the skies of Chicago, there's no harm in looking. In fact, there might be something to be gained. As these stories of what folks are calling the Chicago Mothman or the Chicago Owlman and a few other variants of winged humanoid are beginning to pile up, it's wise to be skeptical and to check out these claims. Our guest in this episode is Allison Jornlin, and I'm linking to a YouTube playlist where she's done hours and hours of footwork to actually visit all the locations where more than 60 reports of this creature have been pinpointed. I hope you'll enjoy this show, and I hope you'll check out the show notes where we link to many of these reports and to her videos. These stories are coming from multiple witnesses, but the prime source for the accounts is Lon Strickler's website, Phantoms and Monsters. I've linked to his site and to his book on the topic. I did reach out to him, as we talk about in the episode, to see if he wanted to talk about his experiences collecting these tales, but he has declined to be interviewed. But we're not done with the topic of Mothman after this, so as always, keep watching the skies and your Monster Talk feed.
Monster Talk.
Okay, welcome to Monster Talk, Allison Jornlin. Allison reached out to me through Facebook to talk about the Chicago Mothman sightings, and I invited her on the show because of some of the extensive work she's done looking into this matter. But I don't think most of our listeners will probably know you or your work. Would you like to give an introduction for who you are and how you got involved with this sort of topic?
Sure. Well, I've always been interested in the essential questions, as many of us are, you know, whether you class yourself as a skeptic or a believer. I think we're all interested in, you know, what happens after death and, you know, are we alone? All those great questions, you know, they always really sucked me in. And so I decided, you know, that I'd get involved in researching the paranormal. And I guess my first official foray into it is I run MilwaukeeGhosts.com, which is a clearinghouse for Midwestern ghost stories and other strange tales. And I started the first haunted history tour in Milwaukee in 2008. And I just did that because, you know, I love Milwaukee and I wanted to celebrate the folklore and the history like so many other cities do. They're really proud of their history. And so that's where I started. But, you know, much more than just ghosts. I mean, I'm interested in anything strange that might give me some answers to those questions, those essential questions that we all face.
Right. Well, we're interested in all those topics as well, everything.
Right.
And so it seems, sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, so, you know, after starting the Haunted History Tour here in Milwaukee, I got a lot of opportunities to investigate haunted places. And so I started working with paranormal investigative groups. And, you know, even before that, I mean, anytime I go on vacation, it's all haunted or, you know, UFO or, you know, Bigfoot, any of those weird regional locations. You know, if we're going on vacation in that area, I am out there looking for the weird. So, you know, now I'm kind of doing it in, you know, a more public forum.
Well, that sounds like us too, I think. I can't tell you how many trips I've organized just on the basis of going to visit purportedly haunted locations. But it seems like you've been doing this for a little while. But we've got you on the show to specifically talk about the Chicago Mothman. So how did you develop an interest in the Chicago Mothman claims?
Well, you know, if I started to see that, hey, you know, all these claims are coming forward in Chicago. If I'm really a Fortean investigator, if I'm really interested in the paranormal, then, hey, you know, I know I'm in Milwaukee, but Chicago is not that far away. It's close enough that any Fortean researcher should want to get out there, boots on the ground, and take a look for themselves. Don't just, you know, sit there in the armchair and read all these extraordinary accounts. You know, hey, maybe get out there and see what's really going on. And of course, you know, this is Monster Talk, and I love monsters. I have to just admit that. And if there's any chance that I could come close or, you know, rub shoulders with a monster, I'm going to get out there and do it. And that's why I became interested. I'm like, wow, you know, like all these sightings, like every week there seems to be a new sighting. And, you know, right now we are up to 67 sightings. And, so I've been to 60 of them. And then, so there's a few that have occurred this year, which I'm going to get out there again and make sure that I document all the locations. Because I think anytime extraordinary claims are made, you want to get as much information as you can. And nothing does that like boots on the ground.
Wow, 67.
Yeah, you've got your finger on the pulse because we thought it was 63.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I just checked again this morning. And there were actually four, which if you watch my YouTube videos on youtube.com/mothman, you'll see that some of them have been removed and no explanation was given. I'm working from Lon Strickler's Chicago Phantom sightings map, and it's a Google map. And so I've actually been to a few more that have actually been removed. And I have about 10 that I need to go out and investigate in 2018 now.
You know, you've got a playlist that connects all these. And
yeah.
So for people who use, you know, URL shorteners, there's bit.ly, people call it bit.ly. I made a bit.ly link for it for Chicago Mothman with the C capitalized and the M capitalized. So if you just go to bit.ly/CCChicago M Mothman, it'll take you right to the playlist.
Cool. Great. Thank you very much.
No problem. We'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. So, but that's, I mean, you're spending a good bit of time out there. And I are you doing this as a live interactive feed? What's your methodology? Yes.
Because So what I'm doing is I go out to the scene and I record a Facebook Live video, and it goes out to all my friends and followers. And then I can take some of their questions if they occur at the location. So, you know, it's just trying to be open source, trying to, you know, reach out to people. So that's where I first will put the video, is on Facebook Live. That's where I record it. And then I take the video and just put it up on YouTube after that.
That's neat. I've never used Facebook Live. Are you getting several people involved, like actively asking questions most of the time, or how does that work?
Well, it depends, because, you know, I don't have certain times when people know that I'm going to be out. It's, you know, I'm a fourth grade teacher, so it's whenever I have a free weekend to drive out to Chicago, then it occurs. So, you know, I can't have you know, I can't give people an advance warning that I'm going to be out hunting Mothman.
Gotcha. Yeah.
But, yeah. You know, yeah, we do get a fair amount of people watching the videos. And that's partly because of the way Facebook treats Facebook Live. They really give it prominence when you go live on Facebook. So a lot of people see it.
How far of a drive is this time wise for you?
It depends.
Right,
you know, it's about 2 hours generally.
There and back, or each way?
Yeah, each way.
Wow, that's a real commitment to checking these places out. Do you stop and get some deep dish pizza or anything?
Well, yeah, certainly there's benefits to going to Chicago, of course. And I take advantage of them whenever I can. But yeah, like sometimes it's like, oh man, like I'm going to get 10 done. You know, I'm going to get 10 done this Saturday, right? And I just go out there and you know, I'm eating bagels in the car and throwing papers around. It's, you know, my trash mobile. But, you know, because it really is something that's important to me. And I kind of wonder why more people don't do it. You know, if the information is freely available about what's been reported, let's get out there and see if we can dot some I's and cross some T's. And if we can't, that's still going to teach us something. I mean, all right, I really wanted Mothman to jump out of the bushes, you know, just to get a little nibble or something, right? Well,
you know, Karen and I have talked a little bit about this because, I mean, what you're doing fits into a couple of, well, several different sort of categories of activity. You're, on the one hand, you're doing investigation. And, mm-hmm. but you're also doing what sort of is being called dark tourism these days, right?
Oh, like a legend tripping.
Legend tripping. Yeah, there's several names for it. But, and I've done it too. I think, you know, I've talked a few times and I'm probably going to do an Art Bell sort of retrospective tribute / discussion episode. And that all started for me back in a road trip I took in 1997 to sort of go see some of the real UFO sites that, you know, I had been looking into for years. But it's the imperative to go out there and see for yourself. It's not necessarily whether you're going to see Mothman,
yeah.
But it lets you actually, what did this place look like? What would it have been like at night? What would it have been like when the conditions were there? You know, are there discrepancies between the alleged story and what I'm actually seeing on the ground? That I think it's a really important thing to go check out.
Yeah, and I just want to find something. You know, yeah. I want to just find an answer. And I'm not wedded to it has to be a monster. Years back, I went to a paranormal conference, and at the end of the conference on that Sunday, everybody was just meeting to say goodbye. And then somebody ran in and they were like, oh my God, I saw this creature outside. It's huge. And they had a picture of it that they projected on the big screen that all the speakers had been using. And I'm like, that thing looks like a hyena. And my husband and I had a little bit of time to, you know, go out and, you know, before we had to rush home. And he's like, hey, do you want to just you know, drive around, see if we can find it. And I'm like, yeah. And we found it, but it was a mangy fox. And it was really sad that it wasn't this huge hyena-like creature that it appeared to be in the picture. But that was really something that taught me an important lesson, which is photos can be really deceiving.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were able to get video footage, follow this poor little guy around. But then when we came back to the conference, there were a few people that were still there, and we were like, oh, we got footage. And they were like really excited. But then when they saw, you know, what it really was, they were almost mad. And I was disappointed by that reaction, because I was like, look, we went out there and we followed the lead. And I just felt like, you know, okay, it's not a monster. I wanted it to be a monster too, but we got something. And I just think that more people need to get out there and just look for their own answers. And I think as far as the paranormal goes, you know, I'm not saying that extraordinary things don't happen. I have had some extraordinary experiences in my life and seen some things that heretofore, you know, I cannot explain by any means that we currently know. So I know those things exist, but I just wonder, you know, we can get out there and we can see, you know, what is going on and learn from that no matter what. And I think in the paranormal, these experiences that you have are very personal. You might not be able to repeat them in the lab. That doesn't mean they don't happen. But I think we got to separate the wheat from the chaff. And, you know, that's what I'm most interested in doing. And that's why I'm still talking about the Chicago Mothman.
Neat.
Speaking of which, can you tell us a bit about some of the major sightings of the Chicago Mothman? Like, what is it that people are describing?
Yeah, so there was one in the summer of 2017 where a photo was captured. And so I was really excited about that one. That was in Melrose Park, Illinois. So what's been reported is pretty similar, although there are some sightings that have been, you know, lumped in together, but where it's like, hey, that sounds more like a UFO, or hey, that was you know, some kind of bug creature. But what's been described is like a 7 or 8 foot tall, dark figure, usually thin, and has wings that can be a wingspan of about 10 feet, and can have like a crest on the head, like almost like a pointed head. And of course the red glowing eyes. So that's what's been reported for the most part. And the Melrose Park sighting, that was compelling because it had a photo. But when I went to that site, this was a turning point for me, because I started to see that things weren't lining up. That they had a photo that went with the sighting. So and this location, Winston Plaza in the Melrose Park area of Chicagoland, is a strip mall. There's no other way to say it. And this woman had been in, this woman who reported the sighting had been in Best Buy, and just came out of the Best Buy, she said. And then this, you know, huge creature, you know, 7-8 foot, that's huge. 10 foot wingspan. I mean, if it's close enough where it is, as she reported, swooping down in front of you, you know, that's going to be huge. And so she reported that, you know, she came out of the Best Buy, this thing swooped down in front of her in daylight, and then she snapped a photo. She was able to fumble in her purse, you know, grab her phone and snap a photo in time before it flew out of eyesight. Now, so I went there, and, you know, I'm disappointed when I go to locations and it's not creepy enough for me, I gotta say. But it was like just your regular run-of-the-mill strip mall, and so busy. That's another thing that became clear to me as I researched these cases. You know, 60-some cases, wow. But why aren't there more reports is my question, because those areas where the Mothman has been reported, for the most part, are very, very busy. In the parking lot there, you know, I did stay there for quite a while because what I wanted to do is reframe the shot so I could find the exact area of the parking lot where the witness took it. And so just the cars coming at you. I mean, it was so overrun with people. So that's what started to, you know, turn my mind to see that, you know, other than just the report of, you know, this extraordinary creature, it's implausible that, you know, if it is so big, more people wouldn't have reported it. So I spent a long time in that parking lot, and I was able to frame up the shot and saw that it was really far away from the Best Buy, you know, like mid parking lot. So even that didn't match up with the witness report of coming right out of the Best Buy. There it is. Here I'm taking the photo. You know, it took like a minute or two to get from the Best Buy, you know, all the way to where the shot was taken. The other thing, of course, I noticed is Melrose Park is right in the pathway of O'Hare Airport, one of the busiest airports in the world. And as I was hanging out there, I saw dozens of planes. And so then I took a photo as well of the planes up in the air. And when you compare it with the blurry photo that's purportedly Mothman, you can clearly see the distinctive shape of an airliner. Mm. And I was like, why isn't anyone else saying this? Why do reports like that just stay out there and they're not questioned? This really bothered me. And I know that not all paranormal enthusiasts and researchers are that lackadaisical about it. But, I think when you start seeing that the reports, you know, don't match up, you know, that's your alert to, hey, you know, maybe we need to do something about this as the paranormal community and call out when things don't match up. Because if we're really interested in the essential questions, and these things that are paranormal are so hard to quantify and qualify, you know, they're just so vague and so, you know, so hard to capture. You know, you can't waste your time on something that seems to be obviously a hoax or somebody just fooling around with you, making a bogus report.
Well, wow, you touched on a lot of stuff there in that section of your conversation, because one of the things I wanted to talk about was the source for this material. A lot of this is coming from Lon Strickler's Phantoms and Monsters website, and he's sort
right.
of, you mentioned the idea of a clearinghouse. He's sort of serving as a clearinghouse, and he's seeking out sightings. So he's asking for people, if you've seen something, say something, basically, related to this. And I've seen this reported as a sort of a flap of Mothman sightings, or as a lot, but 63 sightings in Chicago, even though it sounds like a lot, is not a lot, because there's about 3 million people living in Chicago, and then in the metro area there's like 10 million people in the surrounding area, and 63 people reporting something strange is less than insignificant. I mean, it's just nothing, right? I mean, even if they're absolutely sincere, it doesn't really represent a huge number of sightings. But I'm. It's the way he's gathering that information. We'll probably reach out to Lon and see if he wants to talk to us as well. But if everybody is sincere about what they're seeing, I still have a lot of questions, because it's a really, really populated city. And not only is it populated, but it's populated 24 hours a day. I mean, Atlanta, I'm from the Atlanta area, and Atlanta shuts down at night. But over the past couple of years, I spent a lot of time in Chicago for work. First of all, let me just say, I love that city a lot. It is a great, I know it gets a bad reputation as being like a murder capital, but it really is a wonderful place where you can do 24 hours a day. You can find something to do. There are people on the street. I never had a bad experience. I mean, it was just great. I love that place. And it's got so much history. So
yeah, and I'm a petite person who went to some of the roughest neighborhoods and never had a problem. I'm not saying don't be cautious, you know, but you know, anywhere Mothman was sighted, I went, and you know, some of these areas are notorious, but you know, I think the murder capital idea has been overblown. You're not going to be accosted on the street. If I wasn't, you'll probably be fine.
No, well, that's it goes back to that high number of murders, and then you have to look at per capita of, you know, for the population. Obviously, every murder is a tragedy for someone, but these Mothman sightings, I just don't know how significant they are. And I mean, when you think about, like, Chicago has such a haunted history, my gosh, there's so many ghost stories around Chicago and legends and so many interesting, yeah.
I've always wanted to check out the Resurrection Mary stories.
Oh, yeah.
And one of my inspirations for my haunted history tour was Richard Crowe, who we lost just a few years ago, but he started the whole haunted history tour business in the U.S. in 1973, and that's right around the time they were starting the haunted tours of London as well. So, you know, 1973, you know, that's a long time, but there's just such extraordinary stories from every city. Now, as you say, Blake, some of those areas are just so overrun with people night and day because, you know, as I said, you know, when I was doing my Mothman videos, I would usually take like a whole day and then stay out really late to try to get in as many of the locations as I could. And even, you know, late at night, there's people on the street everywhere. So, yeah, my question is why haven't more people seen this thing if it is so huge? And yeah, my other issue is that when there's obvious problems with an account, why is this not addressed? Because like I was talking about with the Melrose Park photo, you know, people just take it on face value. Now there were a couple of other reports from a rougher neighborhood in Chicago. And I didn't realize that, there's two reports from that same corner. So I actually went back there twice on a couple of different occasions. Now, one of the reports said that it was from a police officer and that police officer said he filed a police report. And so I was really excited about that because if there indeed was a police report, then, you know, that's something we can act on. That's something we can get. And so I was really looking forward to talking to Lon and the other members of the Chicago Phantom Task Force, of which I was a member for a while until I started waxing skeptical and was kicked out. But so my question to them was like, hey, who's followed up on this? Who has asked for the report? And what was the response? Because, you know, I don't know exactly how it works in Chicago. I've gotten police reports here in the Milwaukee area. And I know from Freedom of Information Act request that I've done that there's like a certain way you have to approach it to get the information. So that's why I wanted somebody to come forward to me and tell me, well, who did you approach? What happened? So I could follow up so that we could get this thing. And unfortunately, no one in the group could get back to me. Another person in the group that I still maintain contact with told me that it was known that there was no police report. It was just like widely known among the group members that, you know, that part of the report was bogus. Well, my question is, if someone is going to tell you they filed a police report or even state that they're a police officer and you can't track that down and verify it, you know, why would you listen to any of the rest of the account? It's got to be bogus. So I went through my own sources to see if I could track down that police report. And never was able to find a report that matched that description. Was able to find out about other reports that happened that day, but it looks like that report does not exist. And again, why isn't that report suspect then? In Lon Strickler's book about the Chicago Mothman sightings, he even talks about that case in particular. And his argument is, well, anybody that's, you know, willing to lay down their life for, you know, the people of Chicago, you know, I'm going to believe what he says. And I'm like, well, that's great if that person's really a police officer.
Right.
But how do we know that this person isn't just a poser if you cannot get access to a report that he says he filed?
That's a pretty common thing in historical ghost cases too, where people say we filed a police report. Or yeah. Also, there was a Pinkerton investigation or some other well-known detective agency investigated, and then you never can find any evidence that that was actually true. So
yeah,
it's a way of adding veracity to the report without actually having to do anything. It's like it instantly gives it credibility, except that maybe it's not true.
Yeah,
because most people aren't going to look into it.
Right.
Exactly.
Well, and you know, my experience from doing historical research for my haunted history tour is, you know, going the other way, where I'm looking back into any documentation I can find and seeing what weird stuff pops up. And that can be really compelling. Although, of course, in Milwaukee, they trashed all the historical police reports back in the 70s. So I can't go there for at least historical police reports.
Oh, no, that's tragic. Yeah.
So sad. Because when you find something in the newspaper, you want to be able to track it down. You know, I have been able to use city directories and other means to verify parts of different accounts in the stories that I use in my haunted history tours and presentations. But yeah, I would love to have those police reports to see, you know, if there's anything in there. Can you imagine some of the cool stuff you might find?
Oh yeah, no, I ran into the same thing when I did my Watertown ghost research for a ghost photo. The National Archives had destroyed. They had, I don't know how many maritime records from non-military ships. You know, just logbooks, but I'm sure they had a ton of interesting information in them, and they didn't have room, so they got rid of them. And then, you know, within 10 years, microfiche and digitization would have taken care of the space issue. But, you know, now it's gone forever.
Right. My shame.
And one of the things, too, about, you know, verifying accounts that I think is really important that, you know, I've told other investigators is, hey, guys, no, don't take this wrong because we're all friends here. But I have said, look, you know, there are skeptics and, you know, some of them are really dogmatic. You know, some of them, I would say, are really cynics, not truly skeptical. Mm-hmm. And if you are going to do paranormal research, you have to make sure that everything that you can verify is verifiable, or, you know, is verified. Anything verifiable is verified. You know, you can't just take what people tell you. You know, it's great to have eyewitness testimony, but that can't be the only resource that you use. You know, you have to find things that can back it up. And if they don't back it up, you have to say so. And I said, you know, this is how, you know, some paranormal enthusiasts have been duped in the past, like with James Randi and others who have trapped people in, you know, to show the laxness of their so-called investigation. And, you know, I think if you really want to investigate the paranormal, you've got to be able to have boots on the ground. You've got to be able to actually go to the places and, you know, see what you can see. So what I started uncovering with the Chicago Mothman case is more and more inconsistencies. And we can talk about some more of those if you'd like.
Sure. If you want to tell us about some others.
Yeah, well, one person that has helped me in my investigations is Sam Maranto. He's actually he's the Illinois director for the Mutual UFO Network. And so this guy is obviously interested in the field as well, very open to phenomena. And he actually found that several of the cases that were first reported to MUFON. So not only Lon Strickler was taking the reports in the early days, MUFON got a few of the reports as well. And Sam found that several of them were coming from the same IP addresses. And so, again, that's a red flag, because if it's coming from the same IP, it's likely coming from the same person. And I mean, so you have a tech background, Blake. What can you add to that? Because I'm not a tech expert. I know that you are, but you know, if it's coming from the same IP, you know, what does that tell you?
Well, just for listeners who don't know about this, in there's this idea of internet protocol. So every item, every device on the internet needs to have a unique address, and that's called the internet protocol address. And so those, there's a limited number of those. In fact, we're using IP version 4, which has a numerical number. I forget the number off the top of my head, but we've run out of those numbers. And so the way they've gotten around that is, like, a business might have one or two private addresses, or, like, you know, personally owned addresses. But inside that space, they have, you can give out, like, you can duplicate addresses, and that's okay. But you could track back to a single user if they have a private IP address. So it's interesting that someone would have a private IP address, because what they use is something called DHCP. Basically, when you when you are with an ISP, they will give you a different address when you log on, unless you pay for a static address. So for someone to have a static address and then use that to send different reports but from the same IP address suggests that they're, well, it suggests one individual is sending multiple, you know, claims. That it's a fairly reliable way of saying that someone's pulling a prank, is the bottom line. It's a good technical way of saying, statistically, it's extremely unlikely that they would dynamically give out an IP address to random people, and that those random people would get the same address and then use it. So I'd say that's a pretty reliable indicator that that the source of that information is one hoaxer, not multiple people within a company, for example. So
yeah, so that was Sam's conclusion as well. So, you know, there are people in the paranormal that are digging into the nitty-gritty and looking for those details, because, as they say, the devil's in the details. And other things that Sam Moronto has pointed out to me is that sometimes, quite often actually, in the reports, the witness will say it's a full moon or it was raining. And so every report where something verifiable was mentioned, he tracked those down and unfortunately found, hey, there was no full moon that night, or it wasn't raining, or these conditions existed, which make it unlikely that this person was actually on a boat that day, you know, seeing two Mothmen fly above them. You know, there were things in the report that he could look at and track down, and he did indeed do that. So there are investigators that are willing to put in, you know, that level of rigor, but there are others who, you know, become really popular and then don't follow it up. Just put anything out there. And my point too is, hey, maybe something real is going on. I have taken accounts of, you know, strange flying beings. I even know someone who saw something that appeared to be a pterodactyl the size of a Piper Cub plane. And so there are people who see extraordinary things, and perhaps there are a few of these Chicago accounts where something was seen that is unusual. But how can you find which reports, you know, are something that should be looked further into or should be fully investigated when you have, you know, all of this nonsense cluttering up, you know, your database? It really muddies the water for investigators. There, if something authentic and weird did go on, how would you know? If you're going to take whatever report and just throw it up there as if it's truth.
Yeah.
And you were saying earlier, too, that you mentioned one of the sightings was during the day, but it seems like a lot of the sightings are taking place at night.
Yeah, there are quite a few at night, but there are daytime sightings as well. It's pretty much all times, all hours of the night, all hours of the day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's many accounts which, again, you read them and it sounds like somebody's creative writing project. It sounds like a movie trope. And again, uh-huh. that's a red flag. And another thing that Sam Maranto and other investigators did is they looked at the report for commonalities in like verb use and phrasing and found that, hey, this really looks like it's the same person. But then a friend of mine was able to interview Lon Strickler, and he did reveal that after he takes the account, he will rewrite it to sound more interesting. And to me, that's a slippery slope. You just want to take the witness account as raw as you can get it and, you know, quote them, not wrap a story around it. So again, you know, we don't have any proof there, but like I said, it's a slippery slope. If you're trying to make something exciting, you know, I think it's exciting already. You know, if we're talking about, you know, an eight foot tall flying humanoid, we don't need any embellishments on that. But yeah, you know, making sure that the environmental details match up, or you know, the details of the locations matched up. There was another account that talked about the Mothman landing on a basketball hoop. And so I went around and around. This account was one of the handful from 2011. And so I went around and around just trying to find where is this park. And so finally I found it. It was like a little speck between two buildings. It was like a kiddie playground for toddlers. And so I did find it, but no basketball hoop. Now, you know, you might say, well, you know, maybe they had one there in 2011. But again, it was oriented towards this playground, towards toddlers, and there wasn't much room. So I find it implausible that there was a basketball hoop, or, you know, even that it could have held a Mothman.
yeah, because my toddler doesn't play basketball.
if
my memory's, we're not that tall.
Yeah, but if memory serves, that's also the same one where they talked about a five-story building in the area, and there wasn't one as well.
Indeed.
Interesting.
And again, I went all around trying to find a five-story building. There were no five-story buildings in the location. They all, you know, had three stories as the limit. So I don't know what five-story building they were talking about. So again, these things have to match up. And, you know, I know that these investigators, many of them are not in the area. You know, they're not from Chicago. They're not from Milwaukee. They're not from anywhere near. But when somebody like me is willing to go to every site, you know, I would expect that maybe you take some of that information that I'm able to glean seriously and use that for your investigation, even if it doesn't, complement what you're trying to do. You know, maybe you're trying to make out that, you know, something extraordinary is going on, and there's just not enough evidence to support that.
Good point.
Well, aside from the discrepancies in the between the reports and what's actually physically on the ground, and you mentioned that Lon may have rewritten some of these, I wonder if that may be a factor. But what about the description of the creature itself? Are they consistent, or are we talking about, is there some variety in the descriptions of what they're seeing versus, for example, what was reported in Point Pleasant in West Virginia?
Yeah, they're pretty consistent in that it was, you know, thought to be, you know, 8 feet tall, 7 to 8 feet tall, 10-foot wingspan. You see that a lot. And you also see the glowing red eyes and this feeling of dread. Those are things which seem to be pretty consistent. But there are some reports, like there's one where I actually did get to talk with a witness who the witness says that he saw, you know, something that had like a scalloped bat looking wing. But when you talk to the witness, you're like, well, was this a humanoid? And he's like, you know, it really sounds like it's more of a UFO. And yet it was lumped in. And there's another report which describes like a green bug-like creature jumping from a high building. So these things were just kind of rolled in. There's also another report which talks about just seeing two red lights. And I guess they put that in there with the Mothman reports because of the glowing red eyes. But, you know, the actual witness didn't report seeing a creature, just seeing, you know, two floating red lights, which seemed mysterious.
Interesting.
Yeah. And, I guess you can't... you can't get away from recognizing that this all happened right before the December 15th, 2017 anniversary of the Silver Bridge collapse in Point Pleasant. So it was the 50th anniversary of that bridge collapse, which is associated with the, you know, most prominent Mothman sightings, which occurred in Point Pleasant, West Virginia, from 1966 to 1967, and then culminated in that bridge collapse, which claimed over 40 people, you know, on their way back home from Christmas shopping. So it was a terrible tragedy. Whether or not it's connected to the Mothman, of course, is up for debate. But, you know, that is something, a terrible tragedy that is in the minds of, you know, people that are interested in this. And so it's just kind of curious that this occurred just in time for that anniversary.
Yeah.
Do you think it could be a...
Sorry, go ahead. Good, Karen.
Sorry. Do you think this could be a kind of transplant urban legend? Because of that,
boy, I mean, it's hard to know. You don't want to think that anybody in the field is making anything up for some purpose. But yeah, it's really hard to say. I don't know why there have been, as you say, Blake, you know, there should be more reports if it's being seen in such a populated city. But still, you know, to be so dedicated to a hoax, to keep calling in sightings, and we're up to 67 now. I mean, that's curious also in itself, you know, who is so devoted to this that, you know, even after the anniversary, you know, we had several sightings, and we have, and to 2018, it looks like it might be the same as 2017. Is it just that, you know, it's getting some press and more people are jumping on the bandwagon? It's really hard to tell. But
copycat sightings or something.
Right. Yeah, it's really hard to tell. But is there some kind of creature in Chicago? Well, you know, we don't have much to go on because, again, the witnesses contact the witness contacts are going to so few people, and you're not allowed to verify those contacts. You know, if you try to reach out to witnesses, you get some backlash from other investigators. And to me, you know, anytime you're investigating something, you know, I think you would welcome people coming in to try to, you know, verify, you know, what you're talking about, unless you know that it can't be verified.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This kind of ties in with like the idea of pious fraud, right? We've talked a little bit about that before on Monster Talk, where people report miracles and sometimes people fake miracles because they feel like, you know, this is the kind of miracle that would happen and maybe does happen, but we need more evidence because it's for the better, you know, it's for the greater good. It helps, you know, give people faith.
Doesn't it go back to Padre Pio and his sort of some of the things that he's replicated to try and prove his original claims, to try and reinforce those?
Yeah.
There's so many of those, but it happens in cryptozoology as well. It happens in ghost claims where people sometimes hoax And sometimes they don't even bother to hoax. They just report. You don't even, I mean, a hoax report is way easier than actually creating a fake. Like, you know, in cryptozoology, a lot of times people will do things like Bigfoot tracks or, you know, fake videos. But
I think in this case, usually do that when they honestly believe in it and they're just trying to convince other people.
Yeah, it's really a curious thing. We probably should do another episode just discussing the sort of psychology of hoaxing, but it's a well-known thing. But also people genuinely, you know, and I think maybe this is the word I'm looking for, it's the question of sincerity. When you're looking at rewritten reports online, it's really difficult to tell how sincere the reporters are. The experiencers are. And we all, I shouldn't say we all, but a large majority of people would really sort of relish the idea of experiencing something fringy, paranormal, unusual, cryptozoological. It's novel. It reminds you there's something wonderful and strange in the world. It gives you a glimpse into, you know, these ideas beyond, you know, our mundane, normal drudge of lives, you know.
Sure. It gets you beyond the mundane, and I can understand that. I mean, that's why anytime we go on vacation, I seek out those places where these reports have been made. But I think, you know, I guess I don't understand the psychology of somebody that just wants to make something up. You know, could you self-deceive to that level?
Well, it's so annoying for the people who care, right? Like the people who would bother. I don't want to like be a Debbie Downer, you know. I want to know the truth, you know, and I don't want people to hoax because it dilutes the pool of information out there, you know. It's like there are strange things that happen, but you know whether they're paranormal or not is really, it's a tough enough question without people adding fake information to the things we have to sift through.
Well, I think we're on the same page with that because, you know, I'm like, there's enough extraordinary things that do happen. You know, I know they're elusive, and you got to be patient. And, you know, sitting through those 8 to 10 to 12 to 16 hour paranormal investigations just alone in the dark. You know, talking to yourself and into the recorder. I mean, that takes a lot of dedication to do. But, you know, there are people out there who really are interested in doing the work. And I guess we have to clean our own house of the people who are muddying the waters. I think that's my message. And, you know, that's why I'm so glad to be on today, because I think it's important too that, you know, this is a Skeptic Magazine podcast, but that people who are in the paranormal will talk to so-called skeptics, because I think, you know, more of us have something in common than not. I mean, and I think if we brought our two camps together, there'd be a lot of interesting revelations that would come out of it.
Oh, I agree. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I think there's a lot of distrust on both sides.
Well, right. It's interesting because watching, you know, some of your discussions, I gather that, you know, in skeptic group, I think this is true for every group that involves people, right? That they tend to splinter and have issues with each other and you know, that
factions,
that, factions and different agendas and all that. But what, you know, there's plenty of interesting things that can unite us. It's just really hard to get people to work together. I've had that problem here in Georgia as well. I want to go on ghost tours and that sort of thing. But, it, you know, as soon as I declare that I'm a skeptic, then they're not interested in having me.
Shut down.
Yeah.
So, which is too bad because I'm hilarious.
Right. you are. I'm a little disappointed that there haven't been more puns, Blake.
Yeah, yeah.
Where are my puns?
Sorry, I'll have to wing it. So
there we go.
Nicely
there
done.
You go. Thank you. The other interesting thing, though, is there are people that as I've, you know, I'm not going to talk too much about the backlash, but I have experienced backlash, you know, for taking a skeptical position. And I won't talk about the details of that, but just to say that I also experienced others who, you know, upon seeing that, you know, I was embattled, would come forward, other people in the paranormal community, and told me, hey, I had something similar happen to me when I expressed doubts about, you know, this other case. So, you know, there are people out there who are searching for the truth. You know, they're not all hoaxers. There are people who are sincere and will do whatever they need to do to try to find answers. And, you know, I'd like to see more opportunities like that, like this, where those people can come together with people like you guys and, you know, try to sort this all out and get to something better, you know, get to a better form of investigation, you know, move to the next level. And I think we can really do that by working together because, you know, I guess people don't like skeptics, you know, if they're going to be just naysayers, you know, if they're just going to dogmatically say, well, that's too crazy, it can't be. But if they're people who, like you guys, who are just reaching out there and, you know, trying to figure out what's real for yourself, I mean, like all of us are doing, you know, I think that performs a great service because.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. And I really appreciate that you asked the hard questions because that's the only way we're going to get to the truth.
Well, I think you've heard me probably say before that I call us, we're in a ghetto inside a ghetto. It's already, you know, we're already a small group that are skeptics. And then within those skeptics who are interested in these sort of questions and don't just reject it. We want to go, we care, we're interested.
You know, that
puts us, yeah, exactly. It puts us in a ghetto inside a ghetto. So we're like in a, but I'll tell you this. Anytime I'm in Chicago, I'm more than willing to go look into this stuff and also eat at Knopf Knopf and Luminalto's. I would deep dish I'm going to say Nonsense as well. There's a little place called Nonsense, which is sort of like a sort of Indian fast food with curry fries. It's astonishing.
Oh, man.
Chicago, you got to try it.
That would be the perfect place for us to meet at a place called Nonsense.
It is so good.
What we're all fighting against.
And it's not just the pun. The food's fantastic. So, and they're not a sponsor, but Nonsense.
Maybe they could be.
Yeah. I would. Oh my God, I love their food so much.
Let's monetize.
Yes.
I guess we wanted to ask you how are these sightings of the Chicago Mothman? How are they similar or different to the original Mothman sightings? And do you think that it's possibly the same creature, if indeed it is a creature?
Well, I think that what's most interesting to me is that the original Mothman sightings, you know, these witnesses came forward to the newspapers. They just didn't go to one source. And you were, and it's still today, you know, many of the witnesses that are, you know, still alive, you can contact and talk with them. The difference here with a Chicago Mothman is, you know, something very insular is going on. You know, it's like a few witnesses have come forward to talk to me or other researchers that I know. But I think that's a big problem. You know, if there's witnesses and they talk to somebody who thinks they have an exclusive right to their story, I think that gets in the way of more research into what may really be going on. And are there Mothman type creatures? I don't know. You know, I'm not saying there are or there aren't. You know, as I mentioned, you know, I know people who have seen, you know, something that looked like a pterodactyl, but you know, are these real creatures or is there something else going on? You know, I don't know. I'm not saying that I'm an expert in it, but I'm saying that information should be available to everybody and that witnesses out there should know that, you know, they can talk to more than one person to report their sighting. And if they did, I think that would benefit the field greatly. So I think that's the big difference. I don't know if you guys saw this, but I was lucky enough to over spring break go to Kent in England to do some research on another project that I'm working on. And while I was there, I'm like, hey, what about that 1963 sighting in Kent? I should do a video about that sighting because, you know, I'm all Mothman all the time now, unfortunately. I do other things. And you can find more of my work, too. Like, you know, if you go to youtube.com/Mothman, there's more there than just Mothman. I have paranormal interviews that I've done with researchers all over the world. I also, anytime I go on vacation, as I said, I stay at haunted places. So I make little haunted road trip videos. So if you're interested in paranormal travels, you might want to check out some of the videos I've made on that. So, and you know, I have a podcast as well. See you on the other side, othersidepodcast.com. So I'm interested in more than just, the Mothman, but you know, since I was there in England, I thought, hey, you know, I'm going to check out the site of the 1963 Mothman sighting. Which is really interesting because, you know, people don't think about the Mothman occurring anywhere until, you know, 1966. But there was a sighting that was covered in many publications. And the interesting thing that I found, which made me kind of reconsider John Keel as well, because of course he wrote the Mothman prophecies about all the weirds going on in Point Pleasant. He wrote that in 1975. Now, he also looked into this 1963 sighting and again cast it in the light of the Mothman, of that it was this strange winged creature. But other people from Kent thought that it might be a ghost. But to be honest, when you read the account, it does seem more like a Mothman, you know, to just let John Keel off the hook there. So there are legends of that area in the county of Kent, England, of William Turney, who was the landowner in that area, a very prominent landowner. And when he died, he was built on a little island, which is now part of a park. And so we stumbled into that park and, you know, saw what we could see and did a couple videos there. But it was interesting seeing that in the newspapers at the time, people were speculating as, you know, saying that, you know, maybe this was the ghost of William Turney. But what was really reported was first seeing these red lights, this red light coming from the forest. And so some of the witnesses just saw these strange lights, and others reported seeing this very tall creature come out of the woods, very dark, long wings, very tall. And so that really does sound like the Mothman, except for one detail. It had webbed feet. So I prefer it to call it a new creature, bat duck. I mean, that's I think it's the bat duck. It's not really Mothman because, you know, no reports other than that described web feet. But we have Mothman and then we have bat ducks. Watch out for them.
I've heard of an owl man as well in Cornwall, I think it was.
Yeah.
I'm wondering about, I think that was in the 70s though, not in the 60s.
Right. That was in the 70s. And recently, I just have you know, boxes and boxes of old Fortean Times magazine. That's my favorite paranormal mag. And when the movie came out, of the Mothman prophecies with Richard Gere, they had a special issue. I believe this was 2002 or 2006. Anyway, they came out with a special issue on the Mothman, and they looked into the whole Cornwall Owlman, and the reporter who wrote that article came out with the fact that he thinks it's an art hoax. It's a bunch of art students that came up with this owl-like creature thing that they made. And so that was the conclusion on that one, at least in that one article.
Interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, we love Fortean Times. It's a fascinating mm-hmm. magazine. So,
yeah, wow. and again, you know, if you're interested in the paranormal, you don't just have to go to places which, you know, just slap anything up as truth. I mean, you can find sources that have much more rigor, and Fortean Times is one of those where, yeah, I mean, a lot of times.
And they pay, which is yeah.
Cool. Oh, which is rare among skeptics.
Have you written for them, Blake?
Yes.
You have. Great. Yeah. So that's another source that you can go to if you're really interested in the paranormal and you want the real stuff. You know, I think you'd be, it would behoove you to, you know, find some sources that put a little rigor into their investigation. And Fortean Times is one of them. And there's also many, many organizations that take parapsychology seriously. And there's many journals as well, scientific journals about the paranormal and parapsychology. So, you know, there is that higher quality research going on. It's just that I want it to be more commonplace. I want it to be the norm rather than the exception.
Well, that goes into one of our, or at least my personal core values, which is skepticism is a methodology. It's not a club, right? I mean, it's something that people should take on and use in whatever their field is to try to figure out what's true and what's not true. And if you don't, you know, then how can you distinguish? I mean, you can just be enthusiastic about the stories, but that's not going to tell you whether things are really happening or not. So,
right. Why not just read fiction then?
Yeah,
argument. You know, if you're really into the paranormal, you know, science is a great methodology. You know, it doesn't have to be your religion, and actually it shouldn't, you know, this whole idea of scientism. You know, there are people who take it on as a religion, and to me, they're in a similar position as, you know, dyed-in-the-wool believers. We have to meet in the middle, and I'm glad that's what we're doing today.
Yeah, no, I totally agree, and that we actually... I talked about that with Massimo Pugliucci in a lost interview. That's one of the ones I lost.
Oh, no.
I really should have him back on
Speaking
again.
But
we talked a lot about scientism and the idea of just because something is, you know, has a scientific air about it, just believing it automatically. And that's just as dangerous, right?
So. Yeah. Other side of the coin.
Yep.
Yeah. And I think too that there's other approaches too. There's science, but then, you know, there's also, you know, cultures across the world that, you know, have made discoveries, have learned things without the benefit of science. So there are other approaches, you know, so we don't want to say that science is the only one, you know, although, hey, you know, I love my iPhone that, well, you know, that technology came right out of science, but you know, I think there's multiple ways to look at the world.
Yes.
Absolutely.
So, first of all, thank you for joining us today. I think we could probably just keep talking, but we have to wind down. So,
yeah.
You're doing very good work, though. Yeah. Thank you so much. And we'll put links to all your stuff, your podcast, mm-hmm. and your playlist, and anything else you want to send us in the show notes.
That would be great.
And to Lawrence Strickler's page and to his book, and people can sort of check this stuff out themselves. And we'll reach out to Lon and see if he wants to talk to us. And we're also planning to talk to Lauren Coleman, who's written a little bit about the Chicago Mothman as well.
Yeah.
I'm
in his book, actually.
Oh, cool.
I'm in that one, the recent one.
Yeah, Mothman and Evil Incarnate.
That's right.
He won't
and
be talking to
also
us until
his
July, apparently.
Yeah, his 2002 book has one of my reports about a pterodactyl type creature, and that was the Mothman and Other Curious Encounters from 2002.
Sweet.
Cool.
Awesome. All right. So, Karen, you want to take us out?
Yeah. So, Allison, you know, you're a listener. You know our final question for all
yes,
of our guests.
Yes, I do.
What's your favorite monster?
Oh, man. See, I should have done more thinking on that. I wanted to be so prepared on the other stuff. it's not the Mothman. I think poltergeists. Yes,
ooh,
poltergeists are my favorite monster. I actually know someone who who is one of the tour guides on the City of the Dead tours in Edinburgh, Scotland. And so the Mackenzie Poltergeist is my favorite monster because there's been so many reports of poltergeist attacks over the years attributed to the Mackenzie Poltergeist. So I would say that's my favorite monster. So in Greyfriars Kirkyard in Edinburgh.
Greyfriars Kirkyard is such an interesting story. We haven't covered that on Monster Talk, but that's...
I think I'm familiar with that one.
Well, oh, really? I put you in touch with someone that can tell you all about it and who's also a skeptic. So you might be interested in finding out more about that. But yeah, that's my favorite monster just because it seems to be, you know, whether it's, you know, caused by, you know, people and their beliefs and their expectations or what have you. I mean, there's certainly something weird going on there with all the scratches, burns and bite marks that, you know, there's been over 500 reports. And, you know, to their credit, City of the Dead will actually try to drag those people back to the office who have had experiences and take photos and take a statement. So they do have a database of those reports.
It's interesting. So, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. So, yeah, we could put some links to that in the show notes as well. So
great.
All right. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us and all the hard work you've put into this. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much. I'm really glad to talk to you. And I hope this is just the first foray of you know, paranormal investigators and skeptics coming together.
Yes, absolutely. And don't forget Nonsense, Knopf Knopf, and Luminaltos if you're in Chicago.
Yeah, and let me know when you're coming into town. I would really love to meet up.
Monster Talk.
You've been listening to Monster Talk, the science show about monsters. I'm Blake Smith.
And I'm Karen Stolzner.
Today, you heard an interview with paranormal researcher Allison Jornlin. You can find links to her podcast and research in our show notes at monstertalk.org. I really do love Chicago. I've got some great friends there, and there's such great architecture and great food. There's so much to do and see. There's museums. There's clubs. Oh, it's my kind of town. Monster Talk's an official podcast of Skeptic Magazine. The opinions expressed on this show are those of ourselves and our guests and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Skeptic Magazine or the Skeptic Society. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Monster Talk. Each episode, we strive to bring you the best in monster-related content with a focus on bringing scientific skepticism into the conversation. If you enjoy Monster Talk, we now have a variety of ways to support the show, all with convenient links at monstertalk.org/support. That's monstertalk.org/support. There we have links to our Patreon pages as well as a donation button. A great way to support the show is to buy us books from our Amazon Monster Talk wish list, which directly helps us with our research. We love used books very much, so don't feel compelled to buy new ones, and we love Kindle, and we can share our digital library with each other. Finally, without spending any money at all, you can support us by leaving a positive review at iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Positive reviews help keep us visible in iTunes, which is a great way to help us find new listeners. And please, share our show on your favorite social media platforms. Monster Talk theme music is by Pete Stealing Monkeys. As always, thanks so much for listening.
That you can now subscribe to Skeptic Magazine digitally? Just grab our free Skeptic Magazine app, currently compatible with iOS, Android, PC, Mac, Kindle Fire, Kindle Fire HD, and BlackBerry Playbook. Head over to skeptic.com/magazine/app to find out more and download more of your favorite Skeptic content.
Want to get Capone? Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way. And that's how you get Capone.